Hello there, and welcome back to the Zero Credentials F1 podcast. We're here to unpick and talk about all the action from what was a superb Brazilian Grand Prix of 2025. I'm here with my boy Nelly, so let's roll the intro and get right into it. Mate, I think that was the best race of the season so far. You're not there. You're not there. I can't hear you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, boy.
Keep that in. That was
zero
the race
credentials
of the
right at the beginning. We could see, if you're watching on YouTube, we could see the energy that you put into that opener.
I couldn't deliver a second time. I've killed it. Okay, I had a great race. It was a great race. I had a great weekend. I'm probably still a little bit fizzing from it.
But
can't work this fucking thing.
It's our rookie season. We're entitled.
No, this is true.
We're entitled to a few mistakes. Let's kick it off with what undeniably was yet another superb performance. An amazing weekend for Lando Norris. Just perfection, I think.
It's the weekend we've been hoping for him, for Lando, all season long. And he grasped it and he looked comfortable. He looked relaxed. He looked super chilled throughout the entire weekend. Made his own, didn't rely on anything else, made his own luck. Took the positions in sprint quali, and then the race. He had the perfect weekend. You can't do any better than that.
Yeah, we've been critical of him on here just because that's the way it was. He was making mistakes. His head wasn't always in the right place, but he's fixed that. All credit to him. We never stopped being fans of his. We wanted him to do better.
Big time.
I think he's fixed some of the mental stuff. He obviously had a great time in Mexico last week with the sort of leading every session and then winning. What I think the difference is that when that's happened before, he hasn't always followed up.
Yeah.
But man, did he follow up? It was just, he never looked in any real trouble, did he, again?
No, he did it in style. And even the main qualification for the race, he went out and locked a wheel on the first turn on his banker run, if you like. So his last attempt was his last attempt, and he needed that because he would have started 10th on the grid. And it's those moments where you show the championship caliber, and I think he showed it this weekend. It would be easy to let everything being so close and Max coming up on the heels get into your head, but actually he just relied on the equipment he had and his own talent, and he just knew he could do a performance, and he looked different this weekend. And that's... people say we go hard on Lando, and you're right, we have gone hard on Lando because that's how he can race, that's how he can perform, and that's what we want to see week in, week out.
I think it was absolutely a world champion's drive.
Definitely.
Because it wasn't all straightforward. He was having a push the entire time. And the second stint that he did on the soft tires, he obviously got past Max when he first put those on. At that point, Max knew it wasn't worth fighting, so he didn't put too much of a fight. But then Max then quite quickly after that came in for his medium tyres, was then rapid, and Lando couldn't come straight in again. So he had to hang it out there on those soft tyres for quite a while. His pace dropped right off. So I think that was quite a tricky period for him.
Yeah, in that soft stint that he had, he was actually being quite protective of the soft because at that point... the field didn't really know whether it was going to be able to do a one-stop or was going to be forced to do a two-stop. So he was sort of tippy-toeing around them. I'm not sure he ragged those softs as much as he could have done. Because it felt like he came in pretty early on those softs. Tippy-toeing around.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that also shows the maturity from him and from the team, really.
Yeah.
That he's just dead managing the race from the front. Aren't they? With supreme confidence.
I think there was more in there as well. There was definitely more in there. Yeah, because they had to cover. I mean, at one point, we'll get onto it, but wow. at one point they had to be thinking about covering for Max.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they had time in the bag and were just keeping enough tyre in case that Max did come through. But because at one point it looked like he was going to do a two-stop, but he ended up doing a three-stop because obviously the safety car when he got rid of the hards. But
I mean, realistically, I was kind of confident in Lando the whole way through, but realistically, it was only Max that was ever going to challenge him for that win. He had the Mercedes, which we'll also talk about a bit later. He had them covered completely.
Yeah, yeah.
And once Oscar got the penalty, which we'll also come on to in a minute, that was it as well. So it was really only Max. But I just thought it was just, yeah, like I said, a world champion's performance.
Yeah, he wasn't thinking about anyone else. He went out and did all he could do in that car and get maximum points in the sprint and the race.
He's now got a 24-point lead in the championship.
That's incredible, from 1 point to 24. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we'll discuss Oscar's weekend, but it wasn't the nicest by any manner of means.
It does show, though, how quickly it can still turn around, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because he was one point ahead. He's now 24 points ahead.
Yeah.
So if... The thing is...
But he's still a DNF, it flips on its head again. It's coming right down to the end. He's certainly not bagged it this weekend.
We'll come on to Oscar in a minute, but I also want to just briefly, because it sort of fits in with the narrative of the race, talk about Gabriel Bortoleto, because bless him, he's had, when he's all his life, right, he's dreamed of driving in F1 in Sao Paulo, where he's from, at the Brazilian Grand Prix.
Just one thing,
it literally could not have got any worse.
He's had a fucking stinker. It was horrible to watch. Horrible, because that guy has outdriven that car for most of the season. Yeah. And you think, well, of all the races, I could do with a top 10. Just a top 10. I'm not being greedy. I don't want to win the thing. I don't want a podium. But just a top 10. It could be home. And to be fair, I think, you know, they had the car under them. Nico showed that with the result. But, I don't know whether he overdrove it or... it was just bad luck, but the guy had a sting, and I just felt so painfully sorry for him because it's his debut season on his home track, and you just want to get it home if anything else. But he couldn't even manage to do that almost in any session.
He's had two races at that circuit now in F1, and he's binned it into the wall both times.
That's a good record.
The first time that crash in the sprint race was brutal, wasn't it? I was like, my God, the speed of it.
Squealing tyres, impacts, and... Oh.
Hitting the barrier in mid-air after he'd taken off. It's like, it's scary to watch. I mean,
that could have been his first and last Grand Prix on that one. I mean, that would, in days gone by, that would have seriously hurt somebody and certainly written him off for the main race.
But then he got Lance Strolled. In the main race.
Well, we've all been Lance Strolled, metaphorically in life. You think everything's going all right, you think this is going to be your day, and then some fucking Lance Stroll just fucking rocks up and ruins your life. But, I mean, he's...
Like a Karen. You got Lance. It's Lance and Karen.
It's Lance, Actually, we haven't landed on a male name for that, the male Karen. It is a Lance, Love it. But the team had to rebuild the car several times for him, and just a weekend to forget for him, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was a shame. It was a shame. I'm sure he will bounce back. If you think back to that first race where Isaac Hadjar crashed on the formation lap, and he's, do you know what I mean? It turns around quickly in F1, doesn't it? And otherwise, he's had a pretty good season. As of all the rookies, actually, but
he can look back on this and see that he was literally the starting pistol for the series of events that unfolded.
Indeed, specifically the safety car came out after he hit the wall. Lewis Hamilton's had some issues in that time as well, but we'll come on to Ferrari. But the safety cars then come out. We've then had the safety car restart, at which point, as a result of the turn one action, firstly, why on earth was it
a rolling start?
Yeah, oh, after no. the sprint race. Just to digress a minute. The FIA man. Anyway, let's stick on track here. So, yeah, the safety car's gone. Lando's got a good run. He's left it quite late to go, which I think he doesn't want to get slipstreamed down to turn one, does he? Lando's played a blinder.
Kimmy's still rubbing his eyes and brushing his teeth.
Yeah, he got caught out a bit, didn't he? He did get caught out. And then, so Charles has gone one side because of that, of Antonelli. Oscar's obviously gone on along the inside. The three abreast going into turn one in Brazil, off camber corn and going down the hill. It coming together at that point was kind of inevitable.
Yeah. It was.
And then, Oscar's obviously hit Antonelli. Antonelli and Oscar have come together. That's then knocked Antonelli into Leclerc.
Yeah, well, Oscar locked up, didn't he? He locked up. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally innocent bystander, though, in the form of Leclerc.
Yeah.
Broken his suspension, lost a tyre. He's out with the race. Then Oscar goes on and gets a 10-second penalty. So the question is, was Oscar's 10-second penalty fair or right?
I think, yes. I think he had to go for the gap because Charles Leclerc exactly had to do the same. Kimi was asleep. They both realised he was asleep. They got the run on him and, you know, they had to go either side of him. Oscar, I feel, got a little bit greedy on the inside, couldn't get the car stopped, locked it up, and as a consequence, pushed Kimi in the side, who pushed Charles and caught him just at that sweet spot on the wheel. Sometimes you get that way, it's just face-to-face on the wheels and you get away with it, but it completely crucified Charles. But yes, it was an absolute penalty. He got greedy and he was not in control of the car at that corner. To be in control of the car, he had to be less greedy and reduce the speed a bit sooner. He didn't do that. Therefore, penalty is justified.
I think if you're a steward in that race and you've seen one car get completely wiped out of the race, it's a mitigating circumstance, isn't it? There's been severe consequences for that action.
Yeah.
So I think if Charles hadn't got taken out, I reckon that would have gone down as a racing incident all day long.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
But once you've got a car, once you've got someone who had no part in it as well, just totally innocent bystander, getting wiped out, I think a penalty then becomes inevitable.
Yeah, there has to be consequences. But I agree with you. The irony is, you're perfectly right that had they all made that corner, there's no issue. It's a restart incident.
Because it wasn't. You could argue it wasn't that dissimilar to what happened in Singapore when Lando bumped Oscar. That might be what Oscar's saying. I don't know, but the fact is, it barreled. I was really watching a bit of the highlights this afternoon, and it was a slight. It was a pretty big hit on Charles, but not the biggest you've ever seen.
No,
but it just broke the suspension and took the tire off. The thing is, I think there had to be a penalty, and I think the majority. 70-80% of the responsibility was with Lando, with Oscar, sorry.
Yeah,
but Antonelli did start taking the corner, and that you could argue that there wasn't space for him there.
No, and to be fair, he was committed at that stage because he'd got them side by side. He woke up enough to still, there were, as you say, there were three abreast hitting the corner, but he'd woken up just enough in time. But I just think it was down to the length of the lockup. It wasn't just one of those little puffer smoke where they get right to the limit and the final little bit of it locks just before they release the pressure on there.
It's almost a 90 degree corner as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, if you're on the inside, you've got to be going slower. You can't, because you're not going to get around the corner at the same speed as those on the outside.
And if you get oversteer, you've got a pendulum effect and you've got like another 15 cars behind you. Waiting for the restart. So
I think you're right. Oscar was a little bit greedy.
Yeah,
but he was kind of expecting Antonelli to give him some space. And I think, to be honest, there was still some space that he probably could have slowed down and stayed in. Mm. But he locked up by that point. He was out of control.
Yeah, But Oscar was greedy. But, you know, I'm delighted that he went for it. I want to see that sort of passion in his remaining title hopes as well. Because if he'd have backed off and played the numbers game and said, right, I'll probably be able to overtake them a little bit later, that would have been a sign of weakness, because he probably had the car under with him. We saw Lando was managing the McLaren further up the field later on in the race. But I'm glad he had no choice but to do it. People have asked questions, had he not gone for that gap? It's the old Senna adage, isn't it? If you no longer see a gap and you no longer take it, then you're not a racing driver anymore.
It's difficult because we're just a matter of days or a week or so away from the Ashes.
Mm-hmm.
And the England players have landed in Australia and they're already getting shit from the Australian press.
Rightly so.
Yeah.
Because we give them just as much shit.
Indeed. And I want to give it out to our Aussie friends over Piastri, but I'm not enjoying seeing how much he's suddenly started to struggle. It's like he's been doing his absolute best and it's been brilliant.
Mm.
And then suddenly, I don't think Oscar's doing worse. I think Lando has stepped it up to another level, and Oscar's suddenly 0.2 behind, yeah. and he's like, I'm already at maximum here. I don't know how to extract another 0.2.
Yeah,
and I think that's his problem.
He's got all of. I totally agree with that because, we characterised him earlier in the season as being a bit robotic and having zero feelings and a completely cool head, and he absolutely still has that. None of that has changed. He looks
a bit broken. Don't you think? Like he's a bit like I don't know what's happening. Like it's
more in his voice where he feels that an opportunity is not going his way. That it sounds a bit whiny, but in terms of his performance in the car, that's not 0.2, 0.3 a lap. He's not behind Lando to that degree. And I think it is, you're right, Lando's just stepping ahead now.
If I'd been given that 10-second penalty and I was Oscar, I wouldn't have been as diplomatic as he was. I mean, what the hell is that?
No.
It's no different to what happened to me in Singapore. That's what I'd be saying. Fighting back a little bit. At least make your point. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's even if it doesn't work out.
We got frustrated and said Lando was too much of a nice guy. And Oscar can get angry and ratty and probably should in some of these circumstances.
That plays into your advantage later down the line, because if you give Max a penalty, that guy is going to whinge his head off. He's going to be on the radio telling them, like, calling the FIA stupid and stuff, potentially, crying about it to anyone who'll listen. But what that does is when you're a steward in the future and you're thinking, oh, man, it becomes difficult to give a penalty to that person. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, whereas if you're just all diplomatic about it, I just need to accept what the ref says, basically.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to be disrespectful. You can just say, like...
Say, yeah, but you robbed yourself of that advantage. Because there will be a 10% shift in a steward's mind of, oh, God, it looks like we're always after him. And you'll get the benefit of the doubt with some of these things. Yeah. It's like the Alex Ferguson tapping his watch effect, isn't it? In the football. There's no doubt in my mind, matches finished 30 seconds earlier than they needed to because the referee was maybe unconsciously pressured with Alex Ferguson giving him the eyes and tapping his watch.
I'm not an advocate of giving the ref shit. Like, I think the sort of rugby way of doing it is way better. But in team sports, I think it's slightly different. You should be in a team sport, you should be slightly more respectful in that sense because it's not always targeted at you. But I think with F1, you've got to make it difficult for students.
It's not about giving them shit, though. It's about making your case. And if you feel hard done by, say that you feel hard done by, and that's not having a go at the officials.
Well, yeah. Let's move on from Oscar. People will think what they think, but that's what happened. And it cost him, really, didn't it? Pushed him down to, where did he finish?
It was a pivotal part of the season.
The fifth, wasn't it?
This weekend could have cost him quite a lot when the final reckoning comes.
Let's move on to Max Verstappen's performance. So, after the disaster of the qualifying for the race, as I think I said to you, Ewan White's on the text, that he'll probably start from, he'll, I think you actually, you said, didn't you? You said that he'll might take, well an, his, yeah. take an engine penalty and now get that out of the way, which he's done. Could be potentially very positive moving into Vegas where you've got that long straight. Anyway, and then I added that, well, he might as well start from the pit lane and change his setup as well, which is clearly what he did.
Yeah.
And they've got it nailed on, haven't they? Whatever they did, they've nailed that setup.
It's amazing to see the swing on it as well. And it was not just that they nailed the setup, it's they nailed it from memory or just from the data that they had. They couldn't test any of it between those sessions.
White's made that point earlier in the year, though, to us. He said, on a sprint weekend, Max struggles a bit because it seems to be taking him three practice sessions and the first two parts of qualifying to nail his setup. Yeah. And then in Q1, whichever way around Q3, he's then nailed it and then he's good for the race. And that's kind of proven true again. So White's was right about that earlier in the season. And that, so and then just...
But they had to do a desk of paper exercise from the end of the quali to the actual race itself. And they had to just go by whatever data they'd managed to gather at that point in time. And but what a change. That car looked alive. And it looked like dog shit, to be fair, in the session of quali when they were getting kicked out. He couldn't come out of a corner without snapping the back end. And zero grip and absolutely everything. And the change in that vehicle and, well, the race told the tale. Absolutely incredible.
It was. I actually think it was a better performance than last year because he had a lot of luck went his way last year.
Yeah.
And actually, in this race, he had luck go against him because he got a puncture.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. He got a slow puncture, but bad luck turned to good luck in terms of did he go in under the safety car?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
And he got his... but he got rid of the hards as well, which would have been a dog. So had that race gone in the normal form, he could have been in quite a lot of trouble, actually. I'm sure he'd have come through the field a bit, but not to the extent that he did.
Even at the safety car restart, he did a double overtake before turn one.
Outrageous.
Like, because these two people, I don't know who it was, they're like two of the best drivers in the whole world.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And he just like absolutely done him into turn one.
Yeah. Who had a better car set up than him in qualifying because they outpaced him in qualifying. So it's, and from there, I mean, how bizarre that somebody can, within just a few corners of the restart and as things started to crystallise in the race, the teams at the front were already looking at Max. I mean, it wasn't that many laps until he was in the top 10. I know there was a couple of cars lost on the way, but not that many. And he had to start again from scratch with his... because he went to the back of the grid again for the restart when he had to change his tyres. So, and already the front of the field was saying, Max could do something here. They were sensing something.
There was one point in the race. I was solo parenting this weekend. So there was one point in the race where my kids got hungry and they wanted their tea.
Because are they still hungry now?
And I actually stopped watching for a minute and just made some pasta because I could boil it whilst watching the race still. But then went back to mixing some tuna, sweet corn and mayonnaise into the pasta, which took me about 2 minutes to then serve it for them. Came back and like Max was in seventh or fifth or something. I was like,
bonkers.
How did that happen? Like,
bonkers. And it's
insane speed.
And obviously he got up to an incredible position by the end of the race, but it was just the fact that everyone else was clearly, he's coming, all the other teams, he's twitching, oh, you'll probably get it, like hunting you down in three laps and two laps in one lap. And they were absolutely terrified about what he could do. And you think about that now, I mean, it's a bit of, as you say, in the wet, it's almost the phone book's out the book, out of the window. Anyone can sort of pick up a decent result, obviously Jenson Button way back when, and people can pick up a good result in the wet because it levels the playing field in terms of performance, and it's just who's on the best tyres at the right time. But I can't honestly say, hand on heart, and this includes Lewis and the rest of the British guys, I can't honestly say that there's anybody else in the field who could have done that in dry conditions and come from the back of the field. Yeah, a little bit of luck, but to be fair, it was mostly talent.
I think that's true at the moment. I think Lewis had that in him in the past.
Yeah, there was
a, I think there's been times when Lewis was that good, but Max is, I think, out and out the most skillful all-round driver.
Correct.
On the grid. Like, no one else on that grid at the moment can carve through a field like that.
No.
No,
it doesn't
one.
Thrill me to say that, but I've got to respect it. It was, that was a thing of beauty to watch.
However, having said that, his pace was blistering as well.
Mm.
And was faster than absolutely everybody else, apart from Lando. So that's why, like, I think it was about the middle of the race or one period, I can't remember exactly when, that I was checking the pace of them both. And I thought, no, Lando's going to be fine. Despite Max carving his way through everybody, he was only matching Lando's pace.
Yeah.
And Lando had like a 20-second lead at that point, I think. He caught George when he went onto the soft tyres towards the end. He was very, very fast. Caught George, obviously did him. But by the time he caught up to Kimi, his tyres were pretty much gone, weren't they? So Kimi did a good job defending towards the end, saving his battery for those DRS straights, getting a good exit off the corners before the DRS, and defending pretty well.
Well, the DRS looked powerful, so the fall off in performance for Max happened just at the right time for Kimi. He did it perfectly because he was in bother. And the way that the DRS effect worked on that, certainly the start-finish straight, it was absolutely incredible. But yeah, I was genuinely chuffed for Kimi as well. There were so many, there were about half a dozen incredible stories out the field in this one. But at one point I thought, oh God, Mercedes have let him down because he'd slipped back. And it was the time when we didn't know whether Max would be doing a pit stop or not. And I thought he could be fourth or fifth here. It seems to have gone away from him. But no, they did an excellent job. He did an excellent job. And he was pushing George, who was a fantastic driver, pace for pace throughout the entire weekend. And something clicked nicely for him. And, you know, he showed what he's got. And it was a very impressive weekend from Kimi.
It was. It was good to see, wasn't it? I kind of think the...
He's had a rough season, so he needed this badly.
He did. I think it was whatever Mercedes had seen in him before now. I think we saw it, really. Yeah. He's had another couple of good races, like Miami and stuff, but I think for the first time we saw, actually, he can mix it with the big boys up at the front.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
I thought, and then a good, decent enough result for George, considering he was there or thereabouts the whole time, came in fourth. I think he'll probably be disappointed that he couldn't get ahead of Kimi.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was frustrated with the Max thing as well because, you know, that's... Because they say if you leave the pit lane at the start of the race, I know there was a safety car and such, but he was at the back of the field even for the safety car restart. And they say just with field spread, it should be about 20 seconds between first place and last place.
Yeah.
Just with field spread in the first lap or two.
Yeah.
So that's an immediate 20-second disadvantage that he's at. And he could be up the chuffer, the person in 19th. And so he's done incredible to claw that back. So George will be slightly frustrated. I think his tyres were going away at the end. Timing wasn't great for him. But yeah, another massively solid weekend, and he's got to be content with that.
Yeah. He obviously won Las Vegas last year as well.
He did.
Did George Russell. So, and we're coming up to Las Vegas for the next race. He may be up towards the top of my pick for a win, potentially in Las Vegas, because what is still quite clear is that Mercedes still likes cooler conditions.
It does.
Which we've had for the most part this weekend in Brazil. It's a night race in Vegas in what's coming up to late autumn. I know they don't get much of a winter there, but it still cools down, doesn't it? So it could still be quite cool in the evening, which I think will probably suit Mercedes.
Yeah, I think Mercedes will do well.
Tell me about Ferrari this weekend. Oh,
I think, well, there was some strategy issues again in the initial qualifying session where Lewis didn't get through. He didn't get through to Q1. He got into Q2, but shit the bed on timings again and tyre life for his push run. It didn't feel that the car was horrible this weekend, but I think that because Lewis was looking really, really, he looked great in the sprint. He looked good in the qualifying up to the sprint stuff. But for the GP proper, his qualifying was rubbish. He can acknowledge that. I think he would have done okay in the race, although he went backwards from the start. And I think that just got compounded where he took a knock, lost his front wing in front of him, and had to come back in. And that was pretty much his race over it. But like, it destroyed his
form. What did he get the 5-second penalty for? I couldn't figure that one out.
He caused an accident. Well, he caused an accident. I think it was the thing that caught his...
When he lost his wing?
Yeah, when he lost his wing.
I mean, I don't totally...
I think he was behind one of the Alpines, and he just came out a little bit too late.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of was a relevant penalty anyway in the end. But he... I don't know if you saw his post-race interview.
Oh, I haven't caught that yet.
He was quite down, and he basically said he's been living a nightmare. that he'd gone to Ferrari expecting, like, as a dream, going to drive for Ferrari, and it's just been a nightmare.
£40 million a year and driving a Ferrari as your job. Fucking nightmare. Oh, man, I feel so bad for the guy. That must be really, really shit. To be fair, I would bin it on the first lap every single time, but I'd be still coming up going, yeah, I drive it. But yeah.
I think the thing with the Ferrari and the Mercedes as well is that they're on a knife edge all the time. And I think I had a little rant on the group for the weekend, but I basically hate these cars because all weekend, at so many races, and it was included this weekend, is that you might as well have the teams play setup roulette.
Yeah.
Where they just spin the wheel, it lands on a setup, and you just choose that. And that would probably end up them doing no worse than they're doing now. And it's only really McLaren that have ever had this dialed in, because we've just been talking about Max. Every weekend he's having to build getting the setup right.
Yeah.
Mercedes are good at some tracks. Then Ferrari are good at some tracks. And every Aston Martin are challenging for top five. Suddenly they're at the back on the next race. And the Ferrari was a good example this week because I think Charles said something like that in his post-qualifying interview or press conference or whatever, that it can change on such a small thing. So him going into Q3... They change one tiny little thing, even within there's only so much you can change because you're in park fermé at that point. Yeah. So, like, just little tiny things that you can change make such a huge difference. Yeah. And it's really frustrating.
Like, I agree.
If the teams don't know what they're doing and there's just no consistency, I think it damages the narrative of the whole season.
There's no reward for the data. And it's a perfect analogy that you set out there of it being on a knife edge, because it is literally the case that the tolerances are so fine and these cars are so sensitive and so fickle that something really might... I mean, the driver goes and takes a shit between sessions and, like, your balance is completely off. Like, you've lost all traction and everything else because you've shifted the weight. It's mental. And I don't think McLaren have necessarily managed to nail it more every time. I just think they're... operating window of good is wider than that knife edge. I think that their car just performs better for a broader set of variables, and it's just more stable. But I agree, the rest of them, and I think that's shown manifest in specifically Red Bull as well. We always wonder why the second car can't do anything like what Max does in the first car, but... he can probably, it's in a window that he can live with. Yeah. Whereas the other one, you know, Yuki will literally have to get it on the head of a pin in terms of setup perfect to be anything like performing towards him.
It also, the other thing it does is with the cars where they are, is it feeds into the criticism that some people have about F1, is that it's all about the cars. It's not about the drivers.
Yeah.
And to some extent, that's been true this year.
Yeah.
Because it's so close, but it's always so close. I mean, you say that it's so close between each, it's between everybody. You think that's a good thing, but it hasn't always been this season. It's made overtaking difficult, but it's not always the same drivers that are so close.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's Mercedes. Sometimes Alonso's in the mix, and then other times he's not. Sainz came second by right in one race in Azerbaijan, yeah. I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then the next time he's at the back. Do you know, it's like, well, I'm finding lack of consistency very frustrating, and I'll be glad to see the back of these cars next season.
Yeah, it is. And it's,
although I'm a bit worried about next season's car well, as well.
Oh, yeah, with the self-adjusting wings, no DRS.
But yeah, I think we do need to.
Yeah, but it's...
I've been going down a rabbit hole with it, and it's worrying.
But since you've said it, I agree with you. And I was trying to articulate myself what my frustration is with it. And I think it doesn't... The current car setups or regs, they're so sensitive, and it doesn't reward the talent of the driver on that particular circuit, or it doesn't reward being the smartest, cleverest engineer in terms of your aero package and everything else. It's essentially luck of the draw of, does our car suit, and am I going to hit the nail on the head this weekend in terms of setup? And doesn't give a clear picture of driver performance or vehicle performance. And yes, yeah, you don't necessarily want it where it's one team just running out and winning every race for an entire year. We've had those seasons, and you get the internal intrigue of team dynamics, but they're not really the most entertaining of seasons. But I think this is too far the other way. Who saw this top 10 from last weekend in terms of the faces there? But it's a bit too unpredictable at the moment.
Yeah. Are we just making excuses for our poor performance with predictions? Although this week, mate, we'll finish on a couple of good stories here. This week, you've played a blinder. You've gone full Lando.
Ah, yeah.
Full Lando. And it's gone pretty well for you. So you're now up to 11.
Drum roll.
Hang on.
That was my starting figure.
So that was your starting figure that we just saw. So that's your
sprint,
predictions.
1 point, pull, 1 point, win, 2 points. Am I right?
Yeah, you are right.
And nothing else after that.
No.
But I'll take a 4 point weekend.
I've taken two for the Lando win. I actually thought I'd gone Lando pole when I was watching qualifying. So I was like, yes, I'm a double winner. But then I realised I'd gone for Max. But So let's go back to the current score. White's in first place with 24, who is our third man on this podcast, so you don't see. Number two is in second place is me with 16 points. And then in third place, you with 11, but the field has closed up. So you now have 15.
Yes.
I'm on 18.
Wow.
18. And White's is on 24.
We're smoking him out. We're coming after him.
Yeah. You are Max Verstappen in this scenario. I'm a bit worried. I'm a little bit worried.
I thought it was dead and buried, but I'm three's not a lot, isn't it?
I'll be honest. Don't get me wrong. I'm not that bothered. I'm not that bothered about winning it, but I really don't want to lose.
Just I can't be last.
I don't want to be the weakest link.
I'm much more magnanimous. I can say I have the lowest credentials. Maybe that's the good thing.
Yeah, but you're just setting expectations low. You'll go on and win and be like, oh, it's just easy, mate. So I was chill about it the whole way through.
I've been playing the long game. I'm going to have both your eyes out over the next four races. I'm going to come up and I want it to look like such a big gap that, you know, I didn't want Whites to get cocky on it. But yeah, the tears will be delicious.
I think the key to a good win now is potentially predicting correctly what Ferrari and Mercedes are going to do on a particular weekend. There's big point. If you can nail that, there's big points to be had.
Yeah.
Right, let's finish off with another positive story with the best of the rest. In this case, some of the other rookies. So Ollie Bearman, another incredible, great performance, finishing in sixth place. He was fast in qualifying. Q3, he wasn't quite as fast. But sixth place, brilliant.
Lawson.
Then Liam Lawson in seventh and Hadjar in eighth. So what do you reckon to all that?
I mean, Ollie Bearman, firstly, an exceptional performance through the whole weekend. I mean, at some points in the qualifying sessions where he was nailing absolutely incredible laps. I thought he was going to rob me of my Lando pole point at one point because he was absolutely flying. He just had it absolutely dialed in and looked very, very, very comfortable in the car. And I mean, the testament with
based on his Q2 time, he could have been on the front row, couldn't he?
Absolutely, yeah.
But he dropped a couple of tenths in Q3.
Yeah, because I think he started getting short on tyres at that stage in the game. But the litmus test on this is, you know, he's ahead of some big names, and he was a good six places ahead of his teammate. So, yes, in equal equipment, he's done an absolutely fantastic job because Ocon was 12th, which is still a decent performance for them in the Haas. But, yeah, the RBs were obviously lying astern, and they had a great race, but they had great, it was 0.2 between them by the end of the race. That was their finishing time. So their car was there, the drivers did well in decent machinery, but yeah, he stood apart. Ollie Bearman.
Do you think we'll get a Red Bull announcement now before Las Vegas? Big announcement in Vegas about their driver lineup next year, because I mean, I think Yuki's done, isn't he?
Done, yeah.
He's had another shocking weekend, really.
Yeah,
he's nowhere.
You got to think it's Hadjar. I mean, Liam Lawson won't want to go back into it, although, you know, maybe a chance to recover his faith in the vehicle. But, I feel sorry. It's terrible, but I feel sorry for anyone who gets that spot. I mean, it's a progression, no doubt, from wherever they are, but it feels like a curse. It feels like a punishment.
If it is Hadjar and then it doesn't work out pretty quickly next season, I think at that point, definitely no one will want that seat.
Ah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It gets to the point where it becomes career suicide because, as I say, the only ones that have had that seat and done anything with it have won races in the past. But it's generally been the end of their career.
Yeah, I mean, Carlos Sainz did well, didn't he, to go straight from the sister team into a different team. I think that's got to be the pathway, especially for someone like Liam Lawson now, or they're talking about Lindblad coming in, aren't they? Which would also put five British drivers on the grid if that happens.
Until it's 100% British, I don't care. it's like the American World Series of baseball, where it's just everything is American.
Yeah. Although there are going to be 22 cars on the grid next year as well,
which
adds a bit of extra spice, doesn't it? So, I think we should maybe leave it there.
Good
show. And we'll be back in about a week to preview the Las Vegas Grand Prix, unless any big news comes up and we can be asked getting up and talking.
Highly improbable.
At least this season. We might step this up next season, I don't know.
No, in a big way.
So you need to subscribe and give us some support. So
we're enjoying it, you're enjoying it, so subscribe. Do it.
Simple. Have a good week, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.